So welcome back. Here we are, episode 14. I don't know if it's really episode 14, but episode 14, Caught in a Cycle of Doubt. We see in our handout what presents itself as OCD, obsessive-compulsive disorder. Obsessive-compulsive disorder, nobody from the IBC Halacha class is here, so we have a short introduction. So what OCD really consists of is you can break it up into its components. There's an obsession, which causes a compulsion, which then makes for a problem in your life, and that makes it a disorder. Right? If a person has all different types of obsessions, but they don't bother them, then it's not disordered. But the fact is that there's an obsession. In order to find some type of relief from the obsession, you have some type of compulsion, and this is causing you a great deal of discomfort in your life. That's the disorder. So we see over here, with the middle of our little map, we have all these different stressors, psychodynamics, hormonal change, the weather, diet, you get sick, whatever. All these different things set us off the anxiety. Something is bothering you. Which then there's something obsessive, there's some type of trigger, right? And then what comes in, and then there's a compulsion. And the compulsion, I feel I need to do something, and there's this doubt piece in the middle of it, right? Whether it could be, for example, I need to wash my hands. If I don't wash my hands, I'm going to spread like chicken pox to everybody in the city. It doesn't always have to make sense, or it could start to make sense, and then the brain starts to build on it. They get this, compulsion, right? That I have to do this, and then what'll happen is that they'll wonder, well, did I wash my hands or not? And they'll go back and they'll wash it again, and then they'll say, wait a second, but did I wash it? Come back again. Now sometimes there are more steps in this process, or sometimes it's just, I keep forgetting if I washed my hands, and there's a doubt if I washed my hands. Or you have to say Shema. Right? So you can just take it in a garden variety, scrupulosity. I want to say all the words in Shema properly. So I'm going to come back and I'm going to say the words Shema. I'll say Shema because I was supposed to say Shema. But what happens is that I'm in doubt. Did I say Shema? Did I say that word properly? Maybe I did, maybe I didn't. Okay, I'll go back, I'll say it again. And then you'll go back and you'll say it again. And there's this anxiety, did I say it again? This doubt, oh my gosh, did I say it, did I not say it? That brings into my anxiety, if I don't say Shema, then maybe bad, God's going to punish me. Or, whatever the logic behind it is, and they go back and they find themselves stuck. And one of the big pieces of the obsessive compulsive disorder is that there's this constant doubt and not being able to, to live with uncertainty. So part of what happens, though, is that why the cycle works is that the compulsion to a certain extent it gives them some relief from the anxiety. I washed my hands. I'm not killing everybody off in a plague today. Baruch Hashem. Until something comes and starts that concern again. And different, it manifests itself sometimes in different ways with different details. Even one of Roy Trotsky's books, he talks about the case file of a person, a woman who couldn't be in her kitchen because she was so afraid of mixing milk and meat together, she wanted them to get two refrigerators. We need two refrigerators because maybe something's going to spill. But it's cold. Not hearing anything of it. So what I want to zoom in, we have this slightly popular article about a researcher at Johns Hopkins as a piece from Johns Hopkins about the role of data in OCD. And then I also brought with it the clinical study that the more popular piece is about. So Gerald Nestat is a psychiatrist who's doing research into OCD. He wants to find the another component to this disorder, which is doubt. Doubt is not based on insufficient knowledge to make decisions. He says behavioral trait. In the context of OCD, he theorizes that doubt demonstrates a lack of confidence in one's memory, attention, and perception necessary to reach this decision. So, for example, I once had a client who presented. They said, "I'm very busy with the time." English was their native language. "I'm very busy with the time." I'm like, "What do you mean you're very busy with the time?" They were obsessively checking the clock. I'm very busy mit der Zeit. Or they're trying to say, I keep looking at the clock, but I'm very busy with the time. Yes.
Do you tend to do sessions in Yiddish often or just rarely?
So I don't speak great Yiddish, but sometimes they can't express what they're trying to say in English. So we try to make it work. And there was one specific client where the words would just come to me, what I would need to say. It was kind of funny. I would say that even my clients were impressed. Like, I was impressed also. The words just came out what I was trying to express properly. I guess it means that somewhere in here it's there. I just had to reach deep enough into to go find it. So doubt was assessed with the following questions in the study. Did you complete an activity? Did you doubt whether you performed it correctly? Did you doubt whether you did it all? When carrying out such routine activities, did you feel you didn't trust your senses? Cases were characterized as mild, moderate, severe, extreme on a doubting scale. The study found that if patients were strongly related to the number of checking symptoms, to a lesser extent to the number of contamination, cleaning, and hoarding symptoms the patient experienced. The findings tell us as follows. The doubt might not be a core feature of all OCD cases, rather frequently occurring symptom related to the disorder. The more doubtful you are, the more dysfunctional it would seem that manifests in OCD. 80% of doubters were extremely dysfunctional. He says that most likely it arises from neurocognitive vulnerability in the mental life of the individual, which has its basis in neurophysiology. So what I'd like to look at for a moment now is the actual study we see on the fourth page. As always, the URLs are here.
What's on top?
The URLs are here too if you want to go read it more thoroughly. So I took out parts of it so I didn't. The original packet was close to 30 pages. I said I'm not handing everybody a ream of paper. Everybody doesn't need a ream, such a large ream of paper to walk around with from it. But it'll give you some information to start with. So if we look at the abstract, we see the diagnosis of OCD is based on this presence of specific symptoms, the consequence of the lives of those that exhibit them. It's likely the symptoms emerge from a neurocognitive vulnerability in the mental life of the individual, which is basis in neurophysiology. The prominence of doubt, uncertainty, lack of confidence in the clinical presentation, many suffering from OCD, these are a consideration of the cognitive basis for this phenomenon. Specifically, we propose that OCD emerges from a perturbation decision-making process. We hypothesize there's diminished confidence or conviction or certainty regarding assimilating the information necessary to reach a decision. Because that's the question, what? Of course, the loop, so like we said, there's the obsession, right, which produces a compulsion, and therefore this behavior then is making my life disordered. Did I touch the mezuzah? Did I touch the mezuzah? If I didn't touch the mezuzah, maybe my house is going to burn down. I can't have my house burned down. How can I save my house? I got to go touch the mezuzah, kiss the mezuzah. Or one of the, even more disturbing presentations, guy every 2 minutes stops his car, gets out because he thought maybe he hit someone. Right? Now just once, okay, maybe you hit someone. A person had it. Did I hit someone? What, did I hit something? So it's a scary thought. But the guy's driving and just every 2 minutes stopping the car, you're not going to be able to get anywhere. Right? Imagine a commute taking taking 3 hours to get to work because you have to stop every 2 minutes because you're sure that you hit someone. So you gotta stop a car, you get out and check. Of course, there's nothing there. But so what is creating that doubt? Well, maybe I hit someone. Right? Did you feel like you hit someone? Did the car slam into anything? The car didn't slam into anything. So why do you think you hit someone? Well, maybe I hit someone. Right? Where does that doubt come up? Where how does that work? So this is part of what the study is dealing with. Bottom of the next page. Since the earliest clinical description of OCD, doubt has been described as a hallmark feature of the condition. Indeed, OCD has been called the doubting disorder, folie à douter. That's probably how they would say it. Looks like it's French at least. As well as labels of similar intent in other languages. Well, douceur. So that definitely does sound like what's it called, the French formulation. It was the first to describe clinical patients who experience feelings of doubt. William James attributed symptoms of the questioning mania to the pathological excess of doubt. Pierre Janet explained that the exaggerated need for precision and perfection in perceptions and actions in his patients, as well as means of compensating for lack of certainty. Modern clinicians have also appreciated this aspect of the patients. Shapiro writes that patients with OCD have an inability to experience a sense of conviction and doubt not only their conditions but also internal states. Rappaport described patients as disbelieving their senses and needing continuous affirmation, reaffirmation. And that constant need to check, that constant need to go back. Doubt is a central theme in the clinical appreciation of OCD and is overt in many of the typical symptoms that patients present. For instance, checking behaviors include insufficient conviction about the completion of a task, such as locking a door, despite presumed accurate information to the contrary. Contamination concerns involve insufficient conviction regarding the safety of a contacted object. Right. So besides all of the other part to it, right, the obsession that maybe this... that maybe not washing your hands causes a chicken pox plague, right? And as a result, but the doubt of whether or not I washed my hands. So it's not just okay, I have to wash my hands because chicken pox plague. But well, am I sure that I washed it? Maybe you didn't wash it. I illustrated it to the guys in the class. Imagine a guy finding every lubavitcher that they can, asking to put on their tefillin because they keep thinking that maybe the tefillin of the guy that they put on before was the puzzle. Maybe I didn't do it right. Maybe it was puzzle. Maybe it was puzzle. Maybe it was puzzle. Right? And you keep going everyone you can and saying, I didn't put on tefillin today. What do you mean? We have chazakas. We have rov. We don't have to know for sure. But for OCD, this is not halacha. This is OCD. These and other examples burden individuals in whom there is no evidence of intellectual memory impairment. Right? There's the problem is they can remember other things. This doubt, this feeling of fear and doubt that maybe they didn't. So a little bit of a definition. Doubt can be defined as a certitude of confidence in one's memory, attention, intuition, and perceptions. It is difficult to trust one's internal experiences. Hence, the retarding satisfactory responses to cues, possible information in general. This appears to occur at a reflexive level and often leads to indecision or even incompleteness and just not right feeling. Yes?
Is OCD ever tied to short-term memory loss? Like if somebody were to immediately do something and then, like, let's say they left their house and they locked the door and immediately forget and then they
right,
say...
Right, so he just said, no, absolutely not. It has nothing to do with any of the memory impairments. And this has to do with it specifically, and we'll get to the biology.
But it causes him to not remember.
Hmm?
It causes him to not remember. It
causes him to doubt what he remembers.
Imagine it'd probably be worse if there was short-term memory loss in addition to OCD.
Right. So, but then you'd have to try to make a differential diagnosis because there, if you have short-term memory loss, it's not an obsession. It's not a compulsion. That it's the same action. The guy keeps going to go check the open the door, keep checking to make sure they shut off the stove. But one is because they just doubt whether or not they did it, and the other one doesn't remember at all.
So how does the therapist normally, or I guess psychiatrist decide, normally diagnose it?
Well, because you're going to see a great, as it were, nafkamina, you have the overlap. We'll get to the part where it isn't an overlap. I tell you to remember, I ask you to remember my phone number, right? Or what did you eat for lunch today, right? And somebody with OCD will remember what they ate for lunch. Somebody with a short-term memory impairment will not.
So it's a matter of, like, you gave me your phone number, and then I say, oh, it's your phone number again, and then you say, do you remember me giving it to you, or if I just walked away, then I, like, don't remember you giving it to
me. Well, you just say, oh, you know, like, I say, what did you eat for lunch today? Where were you right before you came here? And so part of that is the M3 mental status exam before you get into it. So we're not talking about a case of impairment. Yes.
I feel like it also kind of depends on, like, if the person is experiencing this themselves, or if, like, let's say a boyfriend or something is, like, causing them to doubt with, by, like, gaslighting and...
Well, that itself
like, is... Because, like, OCD, I guess, be, like, manifested because of intense long-term gaslighting.
So emotional manipulation into OCD?
Yeah.
Right, so... So that, again, that would be that would be more of a question of like a question of delusion, or what's it called? You have the question we would say delusion, not having a hold on reality, right? Which is why it would get gaslighting would be more around that. Here it would be much more specific of like just being filled with did I wash my hands? So we just saw you wash your hands. You just saw you wash your hands, but maybe I didn't do it right. Mm. Right. So. Which is a lot more, you know, in the case of like, you know, person started somebody trying to make a person feel like they're losing it, like they're losing whether or not that they remembered anything, right? That's more along the lines of a specific act, you know, of doubting whether or not they washed their hands properly, or whether did I wash my hands or did I wash them properly, right? Did I just hit someone? Of course, you didn't hit somebody. Like, you know, we were just in the car together. You did it, but maybe I did. Maybe you missed it. Dr. Schwartz was talking about a case of somebody going, and after consulting with a big posek, then going to ask a rabbi in yeshiva, and they said, well, that's a great question. We should go ask a posek. And they said, what does he know about halacha? Right, because the posek wouldn't give them the satisfaction to reinforce their obsession.
How can you tell if he's doubting or if he's remembering
things? So what you do is you do a mental status exam, because what you'll see is it's only the differential you'll see is only with regard to one thing,
yeah.
You know, whether or not I put on tefillin or whether or not my tefillin were kosher, and you'll take the tefillin to the sofer, and the sofer will check it, and then he'll still say, yeah, but what if something just happened to it? I mean, something just happened to it, right? That would be the line of demarcation. So to the next page, he says, according to Sommerfeld, incompleteness is a tormenting feeling of dissatisfaction with one's current state. There's a current drive to correct profound feelings of imperfection regarding the need for experiences to conform exact yet inexpressible criteria. The subjective experience of conditions is not being in a just right state. There's something bugging them until they do their compulsion. The obsession will not abate until it's just right. And sometimes it's not tied to any measurable criteria. Sometimes it is, and sometimes it walks around and looks like halacha, but sometimes it can be something totally different. It can be something totally, totally different. They'll wash their hands with bleach again to prevent the chickenpox plague. Right, or even crazier stuff. A while they'll bleach their hands so they don't give asthma to people. So that's even better, because that's even wilder. Chickenpox, okay, maybe you can make a case. Hey, I don't want to give asthma to people, so I'm going to wash my hands with bleach in a certain way. Also, sometimes it'll manifest itself. It looks like halacha. Sometimes it'll manifest itself. Looks like health. There are lots of different. there are different ways that this can manifest itself. The final construct that may be confused with doubt is the intolerance of uncertainty. This is defined as the unwillingness to tolerate the possibility that negative events may occur in the future, no matter how low the probability. This construct is found to occur in several anxiety disorders and depression. In contrast to doubt, intolerance of uncertainty involves unreasonable distress associated with uncertainty about circumstances out of the person's control rather than the decision at hand. Right? The intolerance of uncertainty is not just I don't know what's going to happen, because here we're honing in specifically not on anxiety where I'm afraid of what could happen in the future. Here it's the anxiety of whether I did or did not do this. Each one of the constructs described is clearly evident to many patients with OCD. We propose that doubt is a primary cognitive process, development and maintenance of OCD. Other constructs occur secondarily, perhaps employed by patients as a rationale to explain experiences not fully appreciated in conscious level. So, a series of study, jumping down to the OCD and down empirical studies, series of studies, Rubin Dar et al. Said, provided evidence that individuals with OCD have diminished confidence in their decision-making abilities beyond specific obsessional checking symptoms. One study, they showed that obsessional persons reported less confidence in their answers, general knowledge tests, compared to non-anxious participants, despite equal accuracy. In another study, OCD severity scores positively correlated with a response time to a neutral color judgment ask. Hermans and company found that individuals with OCD distrust attention and memory. Incidentally, they demonstrated that increased checking exacerbates distrust in memory. The more that they check, because they can affirm it, why are you trying to just remember things? Moreover, even conditions of low certainty, they had difficulty acquiring information to make decisions. Of note, patients reported to respond to instructions that monetary incentives could be garnered by increasing speed or reduction in previously delayed reaction times. So what we see is like that we talk a lot about neuroplasticity, that the brain will change in response to the way that we think. We think differently, the brain response to that. So you see, even in terms of of this decision-making process, they score lower because of what OCD is doing with their brain. So now a little bit of biology. Where's Judah Berman when we need him? He really liked it when we got all biological, one of the other ones. There have been investigations that identify the neural substrata of doubt, certainty, OCD. Stern and company found that OCD patients rated themselves more uncertain than control subjects during a task that involved little ambiguity. They showed that these patients activated a network of limbic, paralimbic regions, including the ventromedial prefrontal cortex, parahippocampus, and middle temporal cortex, as well as the amygdala, orbital frontal cortex, ventral anterior insula. And there is an increased interconnectedness between these areas in the patients compared to controls. That was yet another great sentence from this Chabura.
Might be the longest one, yeah.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So just Olson and company say that the activation of the posterior cingulate cortex and the premotor dorsal aureate prefrontal cortex was associated with greater pathological doubt in the memory experiments.
Like sometimes part of the brain has an abbreviation with five letters.
That's right. Okay, so we'll go to the conclusion, although you can take these and read the rest of it at home. Experience of certainty is an important process for adaptive functioning. Impairment of the process may be important to the development of psychopathology. Knowing one's degree of uncertainty confers benefits for a broad range of activities from sophisticated to mundane. Managing a stock portfolio, deciding whether to carry an umbrella. Conversely, pathological misevaluation of uncertainty contributes to a wide range of neuropsychiatric conditions, including anxiety, obsessive compulsive disorder, and addiction. Focus on doubt uncertainty provides a potentially useful framework for the study of OCD and related conditions. Doubt is a well-established clinical observation with unambiguous exemplars in clinical practice. In this paper, we hypothesize there's a variability among individuals with respect to their confidence in their own appraisal, the information necessary to arrive at a decision. Difficulty of this process appears to be most evident in a person with OCD, but could also concern individuals with other disorders. We hypothesize this trait is distributed across the population, is not unique to the individual with this psychopathology. There will be longer response times than OCD persons process decision-making. There will be more evident, less ambiguous decisions. So there's quite a part of the doubt, the big part of doubt as a structure within OCD. Now transitioning over, let's talk a little bit about Amalek. Here you have some excerpts from the mitzvah of Zechira and Mechia of Amalek from the Tzemach Tzedek's Sefer Derech Mitzvasecha. Derech Mitzvasecha is a Sefer Mitzvos by the third Lubavitch Rebbe, the first Menachem Mendel Schneerson, known also by his by the name of his responsa, known as Tzemach Tzedek. Tzemach Tzedek is, I believe, Gematria Menachem Mendel, and that's why it's called Tzemach Tzedek. He takes a machlokas, usually in the Sefer HaMitzvos, the Rambam, the Sefer HaChinuch, and based on its analysis, then we'll launch into a Hasidic discourse regarding the themes of the mitzvah. So he says, "V'hine l'ha v'intam l'ama hechnis HaKadosh Baruch Hu atzmo l'tagar zeh." So we want to understand, why is it that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to be involved in this war? You know, there are many other wars with many other peoples and the Jewish people. Why is this like such an epic one? Why is this such a big deal that Baruch Hu feels the need to give us a mitzvah regarding remembering and Mechias Amalek? Maha big deal does that? What's the big deal? Mashalo asakin l'shum uma mitzarenu l'chazur l'azir al ma'isa b'kima mitzvah v'gam l'havi mamer rezal she'en shem shalom v'en kisa shalom ad she'imache zar shalom malik. And moreover, like, why is it that Chazal tell us that HaKadosh Baruch Hu's name is not complete and his throne is not complete until Amalek is removed? Now, I want to share with you a striking Zohar. The Zohar says in Vayakil, Kuchibrichu b'chula the craven the avdu sharavim and legai hu leYisrael, my tama lo akshe kameh. So HaKadosh Baruch Hu is involved with all the other wars that were fought with all the other nations against Israel. Why isn't there a big deal about them? Why isn't there some type of mitzvah to remember them, blot out the names? What's going on over here? Right. So it says Kihai Karva the Avid Amalek leGabayhu, because that war and Amalek made with him. Ela vaday karva da Amalekhu bechol sitrin the ila latata the habahahu zimna, that this entire war was a war above and below. Itkivcha achav yabisa bishla leela viiskif latata, that there the evil snake above and its strength below. Machav yabisa Abisha, just like we have this evil snake that sits al parshas orchem, that sits at the crossroads. Uf hachi amalik chavya bisa abisha the havel gabayhu Yisrael the chamin alone al parshas orchem. And this snake sits at the Jewish people on the crossroads, like it says, Asher sam lo derech baloso mimetzrayim, that the Amalek was korcha baderech, that he happened upon you, that he fell upon you on the way. So this is a fantastic, fantastic piece from the Zohar. Right? A fantastic, fantastic piece from the Zohar that says that Amalek is a snake at the crossroads. when we look at this Maimar Chazal, the Zohar, it's really, really fantastic. So what he proceeds to do, and he goes about this in a good 8 double-sided Hebrew pages, which we're not going to look inside for. This is, by the way, this is after I trimmed it down also. But basically what the entire avoda of the war against the Amalek is that Amalek wants to prevent, this is the snake at the crossroads, to take what you know in your mind and allowing it to the crossroads of the body, and it says is at the neck. Crossroads of the body between the mind and the heart. And the snake sits there at the crossroads. And it sits there at the crossroads to try to prevent what we know and then what we feel and what we do. And he wants to be able to dispel that, to stop that from happening. Sits at the crossroads. I wanted to add another piece to it also, and suddenly the bunch of different ideas will light up as a result of this. A parsha's drachim, right, is crossroads. Crossroads, your person comes, and essentially you have 4 different paths when you get to a crossroads, at least, right? You can go the path that you're walking on, as it were, north-south, or you could go the next road, east-west. I can go in any which direction. I come to a crossroads, you go in either which way. I don't know which to go. The snake, which is sitting in the middle of the crossroads, confuses you on which direction you're supposed to go in. That sounds a lot like doubt. That sounds like an inability to make a decision. A malek is one asher karcha badera, who occurs upon you on the road, on the crossroads, to the place where you're trying to make a decision and you can't. And this ability to move forward is disabling this power of doubt. Yes, Yosef.
I think that idea is really interesting because, I mean, for a lot of people, if they approached an intersection, they saw a snake in the middle of the road as they were walking, right, they would just turn back. So it could be like a metaphor for like doubling down, going back. Yeah, to where you were before.
Absolutely, it's a very, very evocative image, right? Of not knowing, of being in doubt. Well, that there's a snake, whether the snake is frightening you back, or the snake is trying to confuse you of which path to take. Yes.
It's kind of like how like the mental doubt is tied with like philosophical skepticism of like God's involvement.
Absolutely, all of these different pieces that crippling idea. Then the tradition that people oftentimes will quote on Purim becomes a lot stronger than saying, "Oh, Amalek is gematria suffik." So if you're not a huge gematria fan, so like, okay, nice. But when you see this the Zohar, right? The Zohar puts up the equal sign. Way to go, and it stops a person from being able to proceed. Did I wash? Did I wash? Did I not wash? Did I put on? Did I wash? Okay. Do I believe? Do I not believe? Is God there? Is not God? God not there? All of these different like obsessive doubts, these obsessive thoughts, not a normal type of doubt. Should I go to the game today, or should I stay home? Should I go watch Quantumania, or should I chill with my friends? Should I go for pizza, should I go for Chinese? Those normal doubts. So that's fine. People have those. You're not sure which one should I do. That's normal. But that sitting there obsessively washing your hands because maybe I didn't do it right. That's a paralyzing doubt. It's a paralyzing doubt. And then the way that Tzemach Tzedek takes this idea is that the snake is trying to stop, and we see this as well, the idea of taking what I know and then trying to act with it because I'm feeling something is incomplete. The snake is, again, it's blocking, as it were, the crossroads of the body, of the neck, the head and the heart, as it were, the head and the body, and sitting at that crossroads, not letting it go through also. A similar idea, not letting it go through. And then to what the Tzemach Tzedek recommends, and the way Chabad Mamarim oftentimes work, is that it's a guided meditation of different concepts. So he says what a person should do is begin to meditate. That's what he says finally at the very, very end. So what happens is that a person should go, and a person should become in a certain way to fire themselves up emotionally, to then begin to do this work to clear the blockage, so that the idea to come down. And he goes through what this meditation would look like. This imagery, the snake of doubt. I thought it was, oh wow, I'm like, wow, this is a great comparison between these two ideas of the of Amalek being the snake on the path, being the snake of doubt, and the this obsessive compulsive disorder where the brain is in a place of doubt. Right? This is not to say that everybody who has OCD is taken over by Amalek. That's not what we're talking about. But we're just saying, I'm just remarking that there's a similarity over here. There's a similarity of this idea of having this place of doubt and this obsessive doubt, not letting a person move on. So Kadosh Baruch Hu, is what we're getting ready. Clearly, next week we probably will not be in a state of being able to have a citizen psychology class together. who knows where we'll all be with all of our perm adventures. But in Mitzvah Hashem, the week after we'll pick up again. And yeah, shkoyach for coming out.